this morning we, as I said, embark on a new series dealing with various questions that people have against Christianity. Next week we're going to look at suffering. If God is good, why is there so much evil in the world? And for a further 5 weeks, we'll look at other tough questions. But for today, we're looking at this objection that Christianity is a straitjacket, that its truth claims are objectionable because they seem to inhibit freedom. If you're really going to be free to be yourself, to be who you are, then how can you live with the absolute truth claims of the Bible? Such claims, people think, only impose upon you. They inhibit you. They restrict you. They tell you in absolute terms who you are and how you should live. And that's not the way of freedom. This is how people think, how many people think. Surely we all have to find truth for ourselves. To be ourselves and not to be put in the straitjacket of so-called absolute truth. The sentiment, I think, is captured very well by the words of Elsa in Frozen. I know it came out a couple of years ago now, but having a 7-year-old daughter, I'm afraid 2015 in our house could be described as the year of Frozen. We're just about getting past having to play the CDs in the car every time we go out, which is one reason why I have high hopes for 2016. Anyway, what have all the little girls up and down the land been singing for the last 2 years? They've been singing along with the unbelievably popular Elsa, who wants to be free. She wants to be true to herself. She has had more than enough of being the good girl you always have to be. And she turns her back on that now with the words, I'll not sing, but with the words, let it go. Let it go. Turn away and slam the door. I don't care what they're going to say. It's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. I'm free. Let it go. Let it go. Elsa views her life up to that point as being in a straitjacket that enslaved her to a particular role. And now she's breaking free to discover her own truth. And is it any wonder why Frozen was so popular? I mean, it's the dominant theme of our Western culture. Common sense, apparently, according to social media and pretty much all the songs of our day. You've got to find your own truth. You've got to be yourself. You've got to be who you are. Look within yourself. Decide what's true for you, what you feel is good and right and true, and you've got to follow that truth if you're going to be free to really be yourself. Well, let's for the next few moments think about the fact that truth, three things. Truth is a lot more important than you would think. Freedom is a lot more complex than you would think. And Jesus is a lot more liberating than you would think. Tim Keller, the American pastor and author, has written on this subject in his book, Reason for God, and these are three big points that he brings out. First of all, truth is a lot more important than you would think. The passage in Galatians here makes a very clear link between truth and freedom. It's an account of what happened in the earliest days of the Christian church. The earliest Christians were Jewish, and that meant that many of them still observed all the ceremonial laws in the Old Testament. You know about sacrifices and priests and the temple and dietary laws, etc. But the thing is, Gentiles were, that is, non-Jews, they were becoming Christians. They were hearing the good news of Jesus. They were joining the church. They heard the ministry of Paul, and they were becoming believers in Jesus and joining the church. And the question was, did these Gentile believers, converts to Christ, did they now have to observe all the Jewish ceremonial laws of the Old Testament? And some in the church were saying, yes, they should. But Paul was adamant that all those ceremonial laws of the Old Testament were now obsolete. He proclaimed with great zeal that Christ had fulfilled all those laws and that Christians were therefore free from having to observe all those ceremonies and rituals. So now he talks about their freedom in verse 4. And you see that in verse 4. It says, some believers, false believers, come to spy on the freedom that we have in Christ Jesus. Clearly, they weren't happy with this newfound freedom that Paul was preaching about, and so Paul had to go to a meeting in Jerusalem and meet with all the other apostles where he contended for the truth. He loved the freedom that they had, and for him it went absolutely hand in hand with the truth of the gospel. And the simple point here, we're not going to enter this passage in any great detail, but the simple point to note is the clear link between truth and freedom. Paul's passion was for the truth of the gospel to be preserved. Why? In part so that their freedom would be preserved. For Paul, there is no fear that preaching truth claims is going to inhibit freedom and be oppressive. So for Paul, truth and freedom go together. And we're going to see what that liberating truth is, but simply note that freedom comes from the truth, according to what Paul is preaching. And that is precisely the opposite of how we tend to think in our culture. The message at large in Western culture is that if we have to comply with the truth, if we have to obey the truth, then that must be a lack of freedom. And like Elsa, we want to let it go. We want to make our own truth. We don't want anyone to tell us what is right and wrong and true and false. And the fear, as Keller says, the fear is that people claiming to have the truth are really only wanting to get power over us. And that is the fear, isn't it? That people who make truth claims and say this is true and it's true for everyone, we fear that they're just playing a power game, wanting to push their own personal set of values, which end up being oppressive for everybody else. That's the fear. And in this country, I think it's fair to say that that's a fairly legitimate fear to have. For many people in Ireland, their experience of church over the years is that it has been very controlling. Very much into power and lording itself over others for its own selfish gain. And I don't think it's any surprise, therefore, that people, a lot of people at least, associate the truth claims of the church with repressive and oppressive religion. And how could you blame some people in our land for thinking that truth claims spell the very lack of freedom? But here's the thing. Jesus said exactly the same thing about the Pharisees. The harshest words of Jesus in the Bible are reserved for the religious leaders of his day. That the apparently good and upright people who knew their Bibles, Jesus said, were just into playing power games. He looked at the Pharisees. He pointed out that while they claimed to have the truth, their truth claims were just ways of self-justifying, ways of trying to gain leverage over God, ways of trying to control other people. You read Matthew 23, verse 4. Jesus says they tie up heavy, cumbersome burdens on people and load them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger. Or Matthew 23:15, Jesus said, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you've succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are." Jesus doesn't pull his punches. It is true, according to Jesus, as he dealt with the Pharisees, it is true that sometimes truth claims are used simply in power plays, simply to control. But here's the thing. While it's certainly true that truth claims are sometimes used with bad motives, it cannot be said that all truth claims, all the time, always, are actually oppressive power plays. Well, no. Ironically, that in itself is a very assertive truth claim. And arguably, to say that no one should make truth claims because that's just a power play, arguably that's the biggest power play of all. It's just a way of resisting everything but your own ideas and what makes your ideas true. The fact is that everyone makes truth claims. And even the claim that there is no absolute truth is, in itself, a truth claim. And blatantly, it's either true or it's false. And therefore, the choice we face is not, as Elsa supposes, between truth claims on the one hand and no right and wrong on the other hand. No, truth is unavoidable. The choice we face is simply between opposing truth claims. When you read the truth claims of Jesus, do you come away concluding that all he cared about was power and self-gain? As he hung on the cross and cried, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," are those the words of a man who was playing a power game? Is he someone whose ministry you deem to be oppressive and self-serving? I don't think so. What we learn when we look at the life of Jesus is that truth and freedom go together. In fact, there is no freedom without truth. He said, "If you hold to my teaching, you're really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." That's what Jesus said in John 8:32. So it is true that some perversely may have used and abused his teaching for self-gain, but there's no getting away from the fact that what Jesus claimed about himself and what he came to do on the cross has led to the most extraordinary freedom and new life that the world has ever seen. I remember listening to a guy called Mr. Andy Cardy, a guy from Northern Ireland, and he was being interviewed on the news a few years ago. And it was following the conviction of Robert Black for the abduction, the rape, and the murder of Mr. Cardy's 9-year-old daughter on the 12th of August, 1981. And as I think I pulled over because I couldn't hardly drive. It was like, what? It was the most powerful testimony to the grace of God that I have ever heard in my entire life. The truth claims that Jesus made about himself and about his death on the cross gave Mr. Cardy a freedom to forgive that is quite simply out of this world. He would never have had the freedom to be so gracious and free from bitterness if he had not known the truth that set him free. You've got to have the truth, and you've got to know the truth in order to have true freedom and fullness of life. Truth is a lot more important than you would think. Second point, it's also true that freedom is a lot more complex than you would think. When Paul went to Jerusalem, he was affirmed in the truth that he went about proclaiming the Gentiles were free indeed from all those ceremonial regulations. In verse 9, they all shook hands. But then look at verse 10. All they asked, it says, was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do, Paul says. So, okay, verse 4, Paul is talking about freedom. But in verse 10, Paul readily accepts that they're still restricted to the biblical ethical norms. You know, the coming of Christ doesn't mean that caring for the poor is now obsolete. Paul knows the truth, that they should still care for the poor. They shouldn't spend their money any way they want. They shouldn't live any way they choose. The Ten Commandments are still important. They still stand. God still cares about how his people live, and therefore they are going to care about how they live. They love God, and they want to honor and serve and obey God. So, yes, there's freedom, but we shouldn't think that true freedom means there are no restrictions at all to anything. That's how modern people think, isn't it? That freedom is the absence of all restrictions. But if we stop and think, freedom is way more complex than that, isn't it? Keller points out, for example, that you can't eat any way you want. I mean, your doctor may tell you that you have to restrict your diet somewhat, and maybe after Christmas you're thinking, yep. You've got to give up the freedom to eat absolutely anything. All the time. You've got to give up that freedom if you want to have the deeper and richer freedom of a healthier, longer life. So freedom is a bit more complex, isn't it, than just the absence of all restrictions. If you're a sports person and you dream of having the freedom someday to be able to maybe play for your country, then obviously you're going to have to curtail your freedom right now by setting yourself to train and train and train. To enjoy the freedom to live the fullness of life that you dream of, sometimes you've got to restrict certain freedoms here and now, and sometimes you've got to change your course. Illustration I gave about a year ago, maybe, yeah, I'm not sure when it was, but anyway, a voice was heard over the radio. You've maybe heard this. A voice was heard over the radio. Please divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision. A second voice responded, recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. Then the first voice was heard once again. This is the captain of a U.S. Navy ship. I say again, divert your course. The reply came back a second time over the radio. No, I say again, divert your course. So with more determination than ever, the captain of the U.S. Navy ship said, look, this is the aircraft carrier Enterprise. We are a large warship of the U.S. Navy. Divert your course now. The reply came back for the final time. This is a lighthouse. Your call. It is no true freedom to ignore the truth. True freedom is living in light of reality, even if it means changing your course. The Christian life that Jesus equates with freedom is ultimately a life of repentance. It involves a daily turning back again and again to the ways of God, trusting that he knows best. He is like our lighthouse, showing us what it takes to live the fullness of life. A truly loving relationship always impinges on our freedoms. And if you're married, you know this, don't you? You can't live independently from your spouse and expect to enjoy the fullness of what married life has to offer. It's only as you give up the freedom of your independence that you find the deeper freedom of a love that really blossoms. Now the trouble is that maybe some of us hear that and think, well, I've been there, done that, and I got burned. I gave up a lot for someone and it didn't work out, and I'm scared to ever live like that again. But here's the last point. Jesus is a lot more liberating than you would think. He is the all-giving and ever-faithful one that our souls long for. Now, we fear, perhaps, that God maybe is like some of our worst relationships. Always demanding, demanding, demanding. After all, we think, well, he's God, and who are we but mere mortals who must submit to his every wish. But you see, we have to see that the God revealed in Jesus Christ, as this table proclaims this morning, is unlike any other God. He doesn't merely tell us from heaven how to live and demand conformity. No, instead, as we've been celebrating over Christmas, God took on flesh and he lived among us. Jesus left behind the glory of heaven on a mission to make us his own. He suffered. He even gave his life deliberately as a sacrifice for our sin so that we might be his forgiven people forever. This is a God whose love burns with passion for you and me. And therefore, Christianity is not a mere code of ethics and truths that you've just got to sign up to. No, it truly is about a relationship. Jesus himself said, I am the truth, and it's about knowing him. It's about a relationship that changes your heart. People think, I could never give up my independence by following Jesus. But what happens when you fall in love? Does a person who is truly captured by the love of another complain about the idea of pleasing that person? Of course not. And when you truly see the love of God for sinners like us, it captures your heart. It's like falling in love. When you know him, his ways don't seem oppressive at all. When you really see who he is and what he's done for us,